You are listening to Talking Images, the official podcast of ICMForum.com.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm Chris, and in this episode, we are talking about Pixar. Our dear, dear Pixar. Toy Story, Monsters, Inc., Finding Nemo, Wall-E, Up. There was a time when every new Pixar release was not just a big event for children and families, but the film community as a whole. No other American animation studio seemed to push boundaries the same way, take their audience as seriously, and appeal to young and old viewers alike with true human emotions that could hit hard, and magic that just didn't fade. But then, at least as far as I'm concerned, it kind of did. And I don't think I'm alone in that. So looking at the ratings on IMDb, out of their first 11 films, 8, yes, 8, have a rating of 8.0 or higher, with one just below at 7.9, and the remaining two obvious underachievers being A Bug's Life and Cars, both with pretty healthy 7.2 out of 10 ratings. And then something happened over their last 16 films. So every film they have released up until present, they've only reached that height 3 times with Inside Out, Coco, and Soul. In fact, they made more films that came in below the 7.0 mark. And there's been more changes. Across their first 11 films, there were just 2 sequels, both in the Toy Story franchise. Then they entered a sequel era. Just listen to this statistic. In the Zeros, the Naughties, if you will, they made 7 films. Not a single one of them was a sequel. Then, as soon as they hit the 2010s, they made 11 films in a decade. And do you want to guess how many of those were sequels? 7. There were just 4 original releases that decade. You can talk about that period as a bit of a sequel era, if you like. Though, luckily, something has changed. Since the 2020s hit, there's not been a single sequel so far, and just one obvious spin-off with Lightyear. That's 6 films, no real sequels. Though that's about to change with their next release, Inside Out 2. So the question here is, are they trying to change course, and has that worked at all? Because if you look at the IMDb ratings, people don't necessarily think so. And I don't really think so either, though it is a nice change to see. So, as you probably gathered, in this episode, I'll argue the title case that Pixar is not what it once was, that their films have indeed become harder to tell apart from their competitors, and that Pixar has, yes, become mediocre, at least compared to what they used to be and what else is out there. But will my panel agree or disagree? And if they agree, how did it all go so wrong? So let's hear it. And I know already that there's one dissenting voice here, from our dear returning guest, Brett. So, Brett, do you think that Pixar is still at the height that they once were? And what do you think about the recent output?
Oh, Chris, hello, everybody. I'm not quite sure if Pixar is still at the height they first achieved when they became notable in the early 2000s, but I would still argue that they are probably the gold standard in modern feature animation, with only Studio Ghibli approaching close to their reputation. I think they continue to blow all other studios out of the water, though we are seeing some new innovations coming from, for example, Sony Animation with the Spider-Verse films coming in that are starting to challenge that. I think that the Pixar films know what they're looking for and consistently deliver on that. They find a way, as you mentioned, to connect not just with adults and kids, but also find a message that everybody can rally around with stunning animation that maybe not always is the most innovative, but always looks spectacular, especially if you get the opportunity to see them on a big screen. So I don't see a decline, and I don't see other studios coming close in the near future, especially since Studio Ghibli appears to be winding down their operations with Miyazaki retiring again. Who knows if for real this time.
All right, so that's a strong counter then, with Pixar in Brett's mind still being the best animation studio out there. That's going to be something we can dive into a little bit later, but what does the rest of you think? Do you think that Pixar is the gold standard, or have they become, let's be honest, a bit more mediocre? And we can start in alphabetical order with the rest of the panel here, with you, Adam. What's your opinion about Pixar of late?
Well, I don't think there's a massive decline. I think they're a bit less interesting than they once were. I think they're not as far ahead of the game as they once were. So I think after the initial sort of 10 or 11 films, I think things got a bit less interesting with all the sequels. And that's when I personally lost interest. And then in the last few films, I think they've gone back to original ones. Maybe one or two stand out very far ahead of the rest. But I think some of them are still quite average, but with really good animation. And I think some of them have really good ideas, but I don't think the plots are always that great. So I'm kind of on the fence, I guess. I think there's been a decline, but I wouldn't say... I didn't love a lot of the first films anyway, so I think there's been a decline, but I wouldn't say it's massive. I don't know if I'm actually... I'm all over the place there, but I haven't prepared any answers.
No, I mean, it's good to have a bit of a more nuanced take as well. There's someone here who wasn't the big super fan of their early output, so that's a pretty important view to get in there. And next one up, it would be Marcel. What's your take on the recent Pixar films? Have they become mediocre?
Well, it's funny you should just use the word super fan, because I kind of inevitably was a super fan. I mean, yeah, before I answer the question about do I think whether they came more mediocre, I think I need to kind of preface for context by saying that the first Pixar feature predates me. So I was inevitably raised in its thrall, right? So there was no escaping it growing up as a child in the... So, you know, its philosophy, characters, imagery were quite, if not deeply formative for me. I mean, yeah, the Incredibles is my first genuine, vivid memory of being in the cinema. Right? It was a truly incredible experience. You know, I remember, you know, walking out of the cinema pumped up, right, filled to the brim of energy and excitement. But, and yeah, subsequently, like with my family, we'd go see each new Pixar released in the cinema. And it was just seeing that lamp jump onto the eye was a promise of a, well, pretty much mind-blowing experience and entertainment. And yeah, after the theatrical experience, a few months later, we'd get the DVD and I'd just endlessly rewatch it between the ages of 6 and, yeah, let's say 12. But yeah, with regards to, yeah, is Pixar mediocre now? I suppose me having, you know, growing up, I have to say that yes. Well, yeah, they definitely had quite a decline. I mean, I'm sure there are personal exceptions, which I imagine we'll all discuss. I expect a lot of people to mention, yeah, Coco and Soul as the two four-letter titled ones that about the afterlife that kind of stand out. But yeah, I'd definitely say that there's a sheer contrast between, you know, my experience with Pixar as a child and you know, seeing all those characters come to life and live in my mind as well. And now when I don't care or, you know, don't go out of my way to see Pixar film anymore, and probably will find it mediocre on average.
It's good to get the super fan in there. And I think I'm not quite in the same mood, because I'm a bit older than you, and I was already an adult when some of the late earlier films came out. But I was similarly excited whenever a new Pixar release was presented. And similarly to both you and Adam, I started losing interest. I mean, I started losing interest pretty much as soon as the sequel era rolled in after Toy Story 3, and there was disappointment after disappointment. But there's one more panelist I would like to get in here before we roll out with the conversation as a whole. And that is Ben. Which camp would you say you're in, Ben?
I'm probably somewhere between Adam and Brett. So I was a little older when Toy Story came out. So I don't have the nostalgia driving the love of early Pixar, but I did appreciate the quality of them compared to other animated films coming out at the time. You know, particularly since there were hardly any CG animated films coming out. Toy Story was kind of the first big CG animated film released theatrically. So, you know, there was a bit of innovation from that standpoint. And then each film coming out, the animation improved as other studios started releasing films. They always seemed a step behind Pixar. And so I think in a way that also gave you these rose-tinted glasses of looking on Pixar even more favorably than perhaps their plots would dictate. It's especially in the early days, their plots seemed to boil down to what if, you know, these non-human things could talk and then go from there. You know, what if toys could talk? What if monsters could talk? What if cars could talk? What if bugs could talk, etc.? They managed to spin some compelling plots out of that, but there was a kind of sameness in the feel, even in those early ones. And I don't think so much that they've gone downhill as that other studios have started to catch up. And, you know, I do have some reservations about Pixar as a whole, but I don't think they're considerably worse than they used to be.
Right. So now we have kind of sorted each other out here a bit. So we have Marcel and myself in the Pixar has, you know, had a huge quality drop camp. Then we have Adam and Ben in the always being mixed on Pixar, but they've probably gone down a bit and they're not that interested. And we have Brett in the still being a pretty happy camper with what Pixar is putting out and finding films still exciting camp. And as even Marcel said, I mean, it's not all doom and gloom. There are a few titles that we all seem to be excited about as well. So my next question is, and we can start rolling this out in alphabetical order, starting with Adam, and just interrupt or jump in if you have anything to say on what anyone else has expressed. But I would be interested to know, like, when you hear that there's a new Pixar release, do you get excited?
I wouldn't say I get excited anymore. I think maybe the first 10 or 11 films I would have seen when they came out. But since Toy Story 3, I don't think I've really watched any of them very quickly, apart from maybe Toy Story 4. So I don't get excited, but I recently caught up on quite a few of the new ones. Like this year, I kind of watched the last few. And I still think they're a decent watch, but I think it's been a long time since I've been excited. Just one other point on the whole superfan kind of idea. I guess I'm a superfan with the Toy Story films, at least up until the third one. I would have been about 7 when the first Toy Story came out. So I was excited when I was a kid or when I was like early teens when films were coming out, but I'm not sure. I wouldn't be excited now. Like I'm 36. A new Pixar film, yeah, hasn't excited me for quite a long time, but that's partly a reflection on my age rather than quality of the films, I think.
As a whole, I haven't been terribly excited about new Pixar films, but I will say Inside Out 2, I'm looking forward to a little bit more than a lot of the newer ones, just because Inside Out, I think, is such a well-written film.
For me, I do get excited, but I do like to not know much about the film going into it. I think of the recent releases, Soul and Luca were the two that kind of left me a little bit disappointed. I think because they were so overhyped or overexposed that when I finally got around to seeing them, it was like, oh, I kind of wanted more. Whereas other films where the reception wasn't so positive or I didn't know as much about, such like Turning Red and Elemental, I actually quite enjoyed. The only disappointment really being Lightyear recently. But for the upcoming films, Inside Out 2, same as Ben, I'm definitely anticipating that one. I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with the next chapter of that story. And for the one announced after that, Elio, don't know much about it. I think we've all seen the teaser trailer that they posted maybe a year ago. Looks like an intriguing plot, and I think I don't want to know anything more until the film comes out. After that, I think there's another Toy Story film on the slate, which I'm not as excited for, but I will probably still go see it anyway.
Yeah, the last Pixar film I went to see theatrically was the fourth Toy Story. I mean, obviously, since then we've had for obvious reasons we couldn't really go to cinemas anymore, and that's an interesting topic in its own right. How did kind of Pixar cope with the movement to streaming platforms and all that? I've got a strong bond with those franchises since I was a child. I would obviously go see them in the cinema, right? But Soul got rave reviews, and I was very, very excited to see that one. But that was a home viewing, clearly. But Soul is the only one of the last six releases that I genuinely wanted to see. Inside Out 2, I suppose, well, you know, that would be a return to the cinema for me as well. But what about you, Chris?
To be honest, I haven't really been excited about a Pixar film for a long time. I mean, at this point, I essentially wait until there is the critical evaluation. I think the last one I was fairly hyped for was both Soul and Coco, really, because both of them got rave reviews. Coco lived up to it on first viewing. Soul did not, but I did rewatch it just yesterday, and then it really won me over. So I do think that those two films have been not quite the magic of the early films, but really close. And I think it's a sign that Pixar is not all mediocre, but then they also kind of remind you that they're standing so tall above everything else, or at least that's my view on it. Brett and some of the others might disagree there, but it's a bit like the exception that proves the rule. When you get something that can connect with you like that, and then you get Lightyear, or you get Luca, or you get the latest one, Elemental, and they just feel, I mean, they're perfectly good, but I can't see how they're different or better than, say, DreamWorks in general. And then it just reminds you that, yeah, something has definitely changed.
On that note, I think it's interesting the comparison to the other studios, especially when it comes to sequels, that everyone seems to take a dump on the Pixar sequels as having inferior quality. When compared to other animation studios like DreamWorks or Blue Sky, who churn out sequels so rapidly within 2 to 3 years, and so often with almost every single original film that they make, spawning 2 to 3 or 4 sequels. If you think of Shrek, How to Train Your Dragon, Ice Age, Madagascar, Despicable Me, all those massive hits, spawning massive sequels. Whereas with Pixar, they don't do as many sequels. Obviously, Toy Story's had three sequels and Cars has had two. But aside from those exceptions, all the other sequels have only had one, and they don't come out immediately right after the initial success of the first film. There's no capitalization like, oh, we need to make another one because this one was so great. There's been an average of 10 years between the original release and the subsequent sequel. And even between Toy Story 2 and 3 and 3 and 4, it was almost 10 years between those. And I think that, to me, speaks to the people at Pixar wanting to do sequels, not just because they want to capitalize on a trend or to make more money. They want to get the story right, and they want to make sure that the sequel makes sense. And granted, it does take quite some time to develop an animated film, you know, 3 to 4 years on average, I think. But I think that the sequels they have put out, even if they've been hit and miss, have all been original stories and not just a retread of the initial film. Well, maybe with the exception of Cars. Yeah, I think Cars is the universally looked down upon franchise. And I'm not quite sure why, because it should work, but it just, for me and for a lot of other people, it didn't.
Cars really felt like the first Pixar film that was aimed squarely at kids. And that's also where you could feel the Disney marketing machine getting a hold of it. And, you know, Cars 2 to me is still the worst Pixar film. I know Chris is going to get into that question later, but...
No, it's right. It's the second worst for me, so it's not a big stretch.
I feel like Cars was the first one not marketed at kids, but marketed at boys. The other ones I felt were kind of gender neutral or... Yeah, but like that was the one that was very clear in the marketing, not so much the story, but the marketing is very much... I think Disney had a lot of princesses, and so there's a lot of getting the girls into movies, but there wasn't a lot for boys, and I feel like Cars was a conscious decision. It's like, we need to make a film that boys will like, and we can market to boys. Like, I still see Cars backpacks everywhere on kids, but you don't see that marketing or merchandising for a lot of the other franchises in Pixar.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think that Cars is also the first proper film where it's just all about the toys, really. Like you said, it's all about the branding. You're not going to get that many soft toys from Up or from Soul. Like, I think, actually, there's lots of Toy Story things too, but the Cars was definitely the big, big push.
Yeah, I don't remember seeing any dead wife action figures from Up.
Oh, ho, ho, ho.
What, too soon?
Too dark, even for Pixar. Another point, I think, I can't remember if it was Marcel or Ben was making, but I do feel that the Pixar films have targeted a bit more adults, especially at the beginning. They threw in a lot of jokes or references that only adults would get, and I don't know whether that was just that was their style or if that was a way to make sure that the film wasn't just for kids, but also adults were enjoying it as well. And I think you've seen a lot of other animation studios take on that trend, throwing in a lot of adult, not adult content, but maybe mature themed jokes and stuff to keep the adults entertained. Whereas I think with Pixar, that's always been there, but it's never been taking away from the entertainment for kids. And I look back at Onward, for example, which is a film that wasn't too well received. And I think coming out in the pandemic really hurt it, and that didn't get the theatrical audience it like the previous films did. But that's something my nephews, who are now 11 and 7, love. Like, my eldest nephew is big into Dungeons & Dragons. So for him to see a Dungeons & Dragons-style story that's, you know, kid-friendly, they could rewatch that hours on end. And I think that harkens back to the earlier films where kids would just be replaying and replaying and replaying all of these films over and over again just because they enjoy the story so much or enjoy an aspect of the story so much. And I don't think that Pixar's lost that wonder when it comes at what do kids want and what are kids captured by. And maybe some of them, like, I think Soul's a bit more adult-oriented, Elemental, I think, not quite there. But for the most part, I think they've stayed true to not just making great films for adults and kids, but making great films for kids that adults can also really appreciate and enjoy and connect with.
Yeah, and I think there's a fine line between what Pixar did and what a lot of the other studios did, where you have, you know, Chris mentioned DreamWorks and Illumination and all these guys. One thing that Pixar has always done better than a lot of these other studios is in avoiding dated references, pop culture references, putting, you know, pop songs in their movies. And Marcel in the chat mentioned Shrek being kind of a major offender of that kind of thing. And it's very true. Shrek is horribly dated at this point. You know, if a kid today were to go back and watch Shrek, they wouldn't understand half of the jokes in it because it's referencing things like The Matrix. And at the time, adults loved it because they were talking about things that they watched. But, you know, Pixar, while they would put adult jokes in, they weren't pop culture related jokes. They were just more sophisticated humor, I guess you would say. And I think that's also helped Pixar with the rewatchability of them and revisiting them and becoming kind of these family classics.
Well, I'd say Shrek has a lot more kind of sexual innuendo jokes in it. But I mean, The Incredibles would come close as an example of Pixar, where you have a lot of, you know, marriage dynamics and, you know, concerns and anxieties about cheating and all that, which the children wouldn't necessarily understand. But Shrek has explicit jokes like, oh, you know, Lord Farquaad is compensating for something and so forth, right? And which I don't think any Pixar film really came close to, yeah, depicting adult jokes or jokes that only adults would get. But yeah, the adult jokes. I mean, yeah, Elemental is an interesting recent example, which is less kids. I don't know why children would be very excited about something like Elemental. But I mean, yeah, maybe there would be. It's not enough of a reason for, yeah, people in their 20s and 30s to go out of their way to see a new Pixar film in the cinema. However, I would say an excitement for us. I mean, for me, I imagine, I hope in the future, this excitement will come back when I potentially have children of my own. And I could perhaps, I mean, hopefully the quality of the studio and the output of the studio will still be the same. I hope to, yeah, create formative experiences for my children or, you know.
Yeah, it's interesting you bring up the family dynamic. I have two kids and, you know, that's part of the reason I've been rewatching a lot of these Pixar movies. And by the way, my kids loved Elemental. I know the story doesn't, you know, that West Side Story storyline doesn't seem like something that would appeal to kids, but there's so much else going on in the background, and you know, the world itself is very colorful and dynamic, that I think it entertains kids regardless of the storyline.
I agree, and I also just watched Elemental this week, and I think that's another one where the marketing is interesting, because it was definitely marketed as, you know, star-crossed lovers, fire meets water. But when I actually watched the movie, and I think one of the top comments on ICM actually alludes to this, it's much more about the immigrant story. And I found that the much more engaging part of the story, which maybe doesn't speak to kids as much. And I do agree, like, I think the animation and the way that the elements interact, especially the water, the fire, I think that would be more appealing to the kids. But for me, as an adult, I really enjoyed the character arc of Ember, the main fire character, of, you know, parental expectations. And I know it's been done to death by many other films, but I feel like this different spin on it worked out really well. And I was surprised at how much I liked Elemental, because I kind of figured that it was, oh, it's going to be kind of on the par with some of the lesser well-received films. But I thought it was quite well done.
I mean, it's funny you say that, because it's in terms of conclusion and progression, it's also very, very similar to Turning Red, in the sense that you have a young girl from an immigrant family who's being pushed into making a decision she doesn't necessarily want to make.
That's true. Though I do think, I mean, Turning Red's definitely aimed at a younger audience, with the protagonist being, I think she's 13, maybe 12.
Yeah, I think so. Yes, Turkey.
And like, there is a minor romance involved, but it's clearly not the plot. And it's much more about friendship and finding your place and coming into your own. Whereas I feel like Elemental is more, it leans more heavily into the family expectations and the romance aspects of the story. And maybe I'm also partial to Turning Red because it's set in Toronto and that's my city. So I appreciated the authenticity, where Toronto actually got to be Toronto instead of masquerading as another city.
Fair enough, yeah. And Turning Red was one of the better ones too. Well, I didn't actually care much for Elemental, if I'm honest.
Mm-hmm. And actually, another thing I just read after watching Elemental is that the city, Elemental City, it's based on New York City. And I actually was just in New York for 2 months. And I think the director was saying that the view from Firetown into the main city was based on the view from Brooklyn and Queens looking into Manhattan. So knowing that, it was kind of interesting to point, like, to see, like, the bridge across and then sort of how the parallels were with real life, and also how New York City, in terms of the immigrant communities, all those parallels, that really got me thinking. And I know that's definitely not something kids will be thinking about as well, but I thought that was a really nice touch to make the film feel a bit more grounded, given how fantastical the story was itself with all the different elements.
Yeah, the city was definitely the most interesting aspect of the film. I mean, you can see it's just intricately and beautifully animated, and you can feel in every passing second of the film, you can feel its $200 million budget. But the city was was very, very interesting, and the dynamic, and I hope they would go more into that kind of direction, you know, in the kind of sort of Chinatown style, citywide conspiracy with the war being redirected and flooding the kind of fire immigrant areas, and, you know, like some more mystery kind of societal aspect. Like, I'd be more interested if they went into that direction rather than...
Do you see any parallels then with Zootopia? Because I feel like that's a similar themed film when it comes to, like, the city as a whole and the different cultures interacting within a city and, like, possible conspiracy or cover-up problem.
I mean, Zootopia was a straight-up Chinatown pastiche. It was an animated neo-noir. That was the front and center plot.
Right, with Breaking Bad references left, right, and center. But I was thinking more in terms of the setting, not so much the plot, but like the setting that Marcel was talking about, where you have this metropolitan city, where you have these different seemingly incompatible populations forced to interact with each other and come together to solve a mystery or solve a problem, and the parallels between them.
Yeah, I think you're very right there. And I actually thought about Zootopia at least briefly while I watched it, because you're right, like, you have different cultures associated with Grand Zootopia with animals here, it's with elements, and there's far more animals, but it's a very, very similar idea. And I think that must have been done many, many times before as well, where you have these big cities with the different types of creatures associated with real world ethnicities and cultures. But I'm blanking on them right now.
The Wall-E Axiom City couldn't be more of a contrast, though. That's just pure uniformity. And
I mean, I think we were talking about, like, what Pixar is now, more closer to the level of quality of other studios. And I think that when we bring up, for instance, Zootopia, I mean, I do think that Zootopia is a film that works much better than Elemental, for instance, if you're putting them side by side. And probably I'd place Zootopia above most of Pixar's output in the last 10, 15 years. And obviously, Zootopia was a Disney film. And it's interesting that Disney obviously bought Pixar in 2006. And they started getting a lot of say. They let them run, like, they already were already in production of Wall-E, etc. But then, almost immediately, as those planned projects finished up, there was sequel after sequel after sequel. And at the same time, while Pixar seemed to get a bit less interesting and more sequel-oriented, Disney had this renaissance where they released some of their best regarded properties. I mean, they released Wreck-It Ralph, Frozen, Big Hero 6, Zootopia, Moana, and then they entered into a bit of a sequel phase as well. And I think that their later efforts, like this decade, hasn't been that exciting yet, though. Encanto and Raya and the Last Dragon have been quite well renowned and are pretty good. But I do think that in 2010s, like, Disney was honestly notably better than Pixar. I mean, that's my view. I mean, I think that in the 2010s, the only real standout Pixar film to me was Inside Out. None of the others really reached that level. And I think the only other film I'd consider remotely great would maybe be Toy Story 4, but that's so far below the others that I'm not sure. But Disney just put out hit after hit after hit. That was a really interesting shift. And then in terms of the present, I actually think that Sony is doing better. I mean, I don't associate Sony with quality in the same way as Pixar, because I'm not hyped up for every single Sony animation release. But obviously, they do have Into the Spider-Verse and the sequel, both of which are excellent. And then they also had The Mitchells versus The Machine, which is which really feels like something Pixar would have done. So I do think that they have placed themselves on the map as a really strong contender as well.
You know, when I was looking at the comparison between Disney and Pixar in the 2010s, first of all, I actually like Coco quite a bit too. I would still put it slightly below Inside Out, but from a visual standpoint...
Oh wait, Coco is... I forgot. I thought Coco was in 2020s. Yeah, Coco will be up there too. Yeah, definitely.
I think Coco is still one of Pixar's most visually appealing films that they've done, especially compared to, you know, something like Inside Out, which while I think the Inside Out screenplay was excellent, I do think visually it was kind of dull. The visualization of the dreamscape or the mindscape, where, you know, a large portion of the movie is just the two main characters wandering through a maze full of shelves with balls on them, it really just didn't pop at all. When I look at all those sequels and then look at what Disney was putting out, by the way, Disney also released some pretty big clunkers during that time, too. They had stuff like Romeo and Juliet and Mars Needs Moms, which
those are not Disney.
Disney released them under there.
They're not Disney Animation. Like, that's a separate studio.
Yeah, I know, but
important distinction, Ben, because otherwise all of Pixar is Disney too.
Exactly.
Yeah,
I mean, it is.
That's fair. You know, you did have Planes was released by Disney's TV animated studio, which Planes was hot garbage. That was easily the worst thing that Disney has released in a long time, and that's saying a lot. But yeah, in general, Disney Studios had more consistently good output, and I think, you know, it almost felt to me like Disney was intentionally doing that, sidling Pixar with sequels to allow their in-house studio to catch up. Now, whether that's true or not, you know, remains to be seen, but it certainly feels that way when you look side by side at what they were doing. And then it feels like once, you know, around the Wreck-It Ralph sequel, Disney kind of let up on Pixar and allowed them to kind of go do whatever they wanted to at that point. You know, that was kind of the tipping point where you had Incredibles 2 and Toy Story 4 around the same time. And then from that point forward, Disney started making more sequels and Pixar started making no sequels. And, you know, whether that's intentional or not, it certainly feels that way.
I'd say one of the more kind of defining moments, well, defining shifts in the entire Pixar chronology. Not the theory that all Pixar films are connected and situated in the same universe, but no, I'd say the conclusion of Toy Story 3, right? Obviously, like we were kind of disparaging the sequels, but Toy Story trilogy, right? If you know, some people say that Toy Story 4 is, you know, unnecessary. I did enjoy it, but yeah, the Toy Story 3 trilogy is considered as one of the greatest trilogies, right? And the ending of Toy Story 3 is a so-called perfect ending in some ways, right? You know, after that perfect ending, they just kind of figured, well, we can't really top it anymore. You know, they started releasing a bunch of mediocrity to get some cash to fund some more ambitious and potentially, you know, stronger projects. I mean, what would Cars 2, right? Most people here, we would consider Cars 2 or indeed The Good Dinosaur as the worst Pixar film. Brave wasn't, people thought Brave was pretty mediocre either. Monsters University wasn't that well received. Those first ambitious projects that came 5 years after Toy Story 3 was released, Inside Out, followed by, yeah, The Good Dinosaur, which was just a mess of a production and a mess of a film, followed by some more sequels.
For their 2010 output, I still think Pixar beats Disney. I've got Toy Story 3, Coco, Inside Out, Toy Story 4, and Finding Dory all ranked higher than my first Disney film, which I have as Zootopia, followed by Wreck-It Ralph. I know Frozen was a big hit, not as great as the others, but my bottom four would then be Good Dinosaur, Big Hero 6, Cars 3, and then Cars 2, rock bottom from that decade from those two studios. I think neither Pixar nor Disney in the 2010s reached the heights that Disney hit in the late 80s, early 90s with the Disney Renaissance. That from Little Mermaid to Lion King, Pocahontas, or Tarzan, depending where you want to end the cutoff, I think that stretch of films is still the pinnacle of at least American animation. And I think that Disney really fell hard in the late 90s, early 2000s. So it was, by comparison, when they started making better films that were better received, it seemed like they were skyrocketing up because I think they had fallen so far. Whereas with Pixar, they had just come off of, you know, a peak and they were maybe going down a little bit. So I feel like those two contrasts were played up for effect. And there may be some truth to, you know, Disney surreptitiously making Pixar less good so that they could do better with their own films, which doesn't really make sense considering they're both owned by the same company, but maybe they're worried about the different brand recognitions. Who knows? But I would still say that in that decade, Pixar still put out, on average, better films, and they're definitely films that spoke better to me. That being said, I haven't rewatched any of those 2010s films, so maybe my opinion will change after I rewatch some or all of them.
Yeah, and I also didn't mention Toy Story 3 there, because Toy Story 3 is one of my favorites as well. So I would start to count, I guess, in 2011 or 2012 if I want to swing it in Disney's favor. And yeah, you're right, it wasn't all perfect from Disney. And the narrative that you have Pixar falling and Disney improving may have a little bit something to do there, though. I do think that, well, actually, yeah, Disney did come out of a big slump there. I mean, before the purchase of Pixar, they hadn't really had, let me just quickly check my list here. Like, you had the big hits in the 90s, obviously. There was the Renaissance with Beauty and the Beast and Aladdin and the Lion King, Pocahontas. But then, you know, they did, as the 2000s were closing in after Tarzan, they did Fantasia 2000, Dinosaur, Atlantis, Lost Empire, Treasure Planet. I mean, they're not terrible. Like, you have Lilo and Stitch, you have The Emperor's New Groove. Oh, Home on the Range, Chicken Little. Yeah, okay, never mind. Yeah, so you can see there was like this Meet the Robinsons. Bolt was pretty mediocre. You had this period where...
But yeah, Home on the Range is easily the worst. I think it's easily the worst animated Disney movie they've ever made. I
don't know. Those 1940s ones are pretty darn close.
Oh, I liked some of those. You mean like the animated, like the anthology ones, like Melody Time and Make Mine Music?
Yeah, the wartime ones.
Right. I haven't actually seen those. Maybe we should do an episode on those. But I mean...
I those are entertaining to me. Home on the Range was actively painful.
Yeah, it was pretty abysmal. It was like
talking cows. The jokes were bad consistently. The screenplay was lazy. The animation wasn't very good. It felt incredibly tossed off. Easily Disney's worst movie.
Yeah. I mean, in the 2000s, really, I would say only Emperor's New Groove and Lilo and Stitch got good reception. Even then, Lilo and Stitch is the only one I really liked. And I think that the sort of Disney resurgence started when Princess and the Frog came out in 2009. That was really when things started to look up for them.
Yes. And Princess and the Frog was a bit of a throwback too, because that was like the advertised as their first 2D in ages and their return to norm. And then, you know, they went all in with the 3D afterwards.
Yeah, Tangled, I always, you know, remembering back, Tangled seemed kind of a turning point for Disney Animation, where it was their first big successful CG animated one. They had done some before, like Chicken Little, but
yeah, exactly.
And Tangled, it was like, hey, Disney is doing fairy tales again in a big way.
Yes, and they also twisted it around a bit. They were also trying to be Shrek a little bit. Not quite, but they were like, we're self-aware now.
I felt like Tangled struck a little bit better balance than Shrek, honestly.
Well, also, Tangled was based on an existing fairy tale, whereas Shrek was based on a book that most people hadn't heard of, so that they had more of a framework that people were familiar with that they could identify with without knowing anything else. It's like, oh, it's the Rapunzel story? Okay, I already kind of know what to expect, and it's just going to be a twist. And I think the important thing there is they called it Tangled instead of calling it Rapunzel because they deviated so much from the traditional fairy tale, whereas the other ones like Beauty and the Beast or Little Mermaid, they very much stuck to the existing story and then just kind of made some modernizations or Disneyfications.
Yeah. Going back to Pixar, though, what is the worst Pixar movie? I know there seems to be some contention between Good Dinosaur and Cars 2. If does anyone think that it's not one of those two?
Oh, yes, I'd love to hear that.
Well, I'd say the Turning Red and the Good Dinosaur, which I both saw very recently. I'd rank them as my least favorites.
Oh, wow, Turning Red.
Yeah, I don't know. The first 20, 30 minutes, I was quite, you know, excited. And it was promising. It was this fast-paced, ambiguous Kafka metamorphosis, coming-of-age story. But it just got increasingly lost in me as it went along. And I just, at the end of the film, I was preferring even The Good Dinosaur, which has a weird kind of experimental vibe to it. But it is obviously a mess of a film. And currently, I would say Turning Red is my least favorite.
For me, Cars 2 is the lowest one I rated on. I gave it a 6.6. Followed by Lightyear, I gave a 6.8. These are scales out of 10. And the other films that come close are Cars and Cars 3, which I both gave 7.2. Everything else I've got at 7.6 or above, which is pretty darn decent. But yeah, Cars 2 was just... why?
Cars 2 felt like Disney pushing the marketing. I mean, it didn't have any nuance to it at all. It was basically, what if Mater was James Bond and go? And a lot more Mater, one of my least favorite characters in any Pixar movie. And just the plotting felt lazy. The plot has potential to be fun, but the movie just wasn't.
Yeah.
I actually liked Cars 3 pretty well. It was the only Cars movie where they tried to kind of inject some of the Pixar pathos. And you know, it was kind of a midlife crisis, learning when to retire and let go for the new generation kind of theme to it, which I thought was interesting. I imagine that there were probably guys in the Pixar studio that were feeling that way and wanted to tell that kind of story.
What about you, Adam?
Yeah, well, I caught up on most of the films in the last few days, but I haven't watched the Cars sequels yet because I guess I disliked Cars so much that the prospect of sitting through the sequels just sounds like a lot of pain. So maybe I'll watch them one day. But I watched The Good Dinosaur a couple of days ago, and I was pretty much blown away by how bad it was, because I kind of feel like Pixar, even if they make mediocre films, at least there's normally redeeming kind of qualities, but I actually struggled to get through The Good Dinosaur. The plot was like just so dull and kind of like, I know, like I read about there was bad production, like there was production difficulties, and I think that comes through. I just thought it was by far the dullest Pixar film I've ever seen, and I thought it was really, really weak. But yeah, the Cars sequels could well be below it, but they're the only two that I haven't watched yet. But I think they'll be struggling to get worse than The Good Dinosaur based on what I've seen.
I mean, you can think about Cars 2 as, since you don't like Cars, as Cars, but it's even worse. But yeah, no, I didn't hate Cars. I thought it was perfectly pleasant. I didn't hate Cars 2 either. I thought it was, it's like I said, it's my second least favorite. But it was still relatively enjoyable. In fact, every single thing that Pixar has ever done, I would put in the enjoyable camp, except for The Good Dinosaur. I think that this is just the oddest film that they ever made, because essentially in every other Pixar films, you have all of these memorable characters, you have important plotting or teams, you have some kind of balance. Everything felt off there. Even the animation didn't feel as special. And just like Cars, it felt like a children's film rather than like something that was aimed at all audiences. So it was just like they were just rendering themselves non-distinct. There was none of the Pixar magic. Imagine, like, it's not even a comparison, but think of something like Ice Age, for instance. There you have vibrant characters, there's lots of fun, lots of engagement, you manage to get something for young and old, etc. Like, The Good Dinosaur couldn't even do that. Like, The Good Dinosaur isn't even Ice Age 3. It's not even one of the early sequels of The Land Before Time. It's just bland in every possible way. It felt lifeless. And it felt like it was something like, if it hadn't been the Pixar logo on it, essentially, I wouldn't have seen it. And I was just so surprised and disappointed watching that. I mean, most of it I've forgotten at this point. I'm mainly just left with the feeling of thinking, what the hell is this?
Yeah, I was actually forced to rewatch it by my kids a couple of years ago, and it does not improve on a rewatch. I remember seeing it when it first came out, and the only notable thing about it was how good the background animations were. They were probably the highest quality of any animated film out at that point, like the water animation and things like that. But that in and of itself was even a negative for the film, because the way that the main characters were animated were very goofy and childlike, and so there was this bizarre cognitive dissonance that just kept bugging my brain, where it was, why do you have these ridiculously silly looking characters in this hyper realistic environment? And I don't know, it's kind of like those old Australian Dot and the Kangaroo movies where they have animated characters on you know, live action backgrounds, and it felt really weird and uncomfortable. Maybe, and that may be some of the, you know, more experimental tone that Marcel was referring to earlier.
Yeah, there's just something that just went terribly wrong with the Good Dinosaur Eminence.
Yeah, I mean, they basically fired the first writer, scrapped the script, they changed the director in during production, and the producer. Like, it was really obvious they had a lot of trouble with that movie. They basically, the original writer couldn't figure out where they wanted the story to go. They had an original concept of, you know, what if we had this dinosaur family in kind of a more modern setting, and that germ of an idea they just never really could get past. And I think it's really obvious with that one.
Yeah, I just wanted to agree on the animation. I think the animation of the dinosaurs, I mean, beyond having a mediocre plot, the animation of the dinosaurs was just really off-putting, and I think that made the film even worse. I think also the whole concept of the film was that dinosaurs hadn't been wiped out, yet the plot just had like that one spot, the boy who doesn't speak, and it was like, I don't really see what the point was in saying dinosaurs hadn't been wiped out when there were barely any humans in the film. There weren't many dinosaurs in the film. You had a human that didn't even speak. Pretty much everything about that film annoyed me in a way that even something like Cars, which I didn't like, you know, had some good qualities, but I would say almost every part of The Good Dinosaur annoyed me in some way, which is not normal for Pixar, even with the sequels.
Yeah, at least with Cars, they knew that the plot worked because it was basically Doc Hollywood. And they were like, well, Doc Hollywood was a kind of a success, so we'll just do that with Cars.
Cars has got George Carlin and Paul Newman as voice actors, you know, so there's a... And for me, Cars was actually... I mean, I saw that at the cinema at the time when I was, eight or so. That was a cool and interesting kind of first insight into rural, cut-off town America, right? Route 66, right? Enjoyed Cars modestly at the time, and I have seen it a bunch of times. But, I mean, it didn't have the same impression as all the other Pixars did. Even there, you already have this theme of, right, the younger generations inevitably are going to outgrow you, or you're going to, yeah. But you still have something to teach them and so forth, right? Pixar is all about just this generations teaching each other stuff. I mean, yeah, it's crazy. That's why I shouldn't really watch Pixar's in this close succession, because there is a lot of repetitive themes and material in it. I don't know how you felt about it, Adam, like seeing, you know, binging pretty much 4 or 5 Pixar films in a row, especially the newer ones that you haven't seen. And
I spread out the newer ones a little bit more. I thought they were all pretty decent, just not, maybe not as good as the old ones. I think binging the sequels was a bit harder. But yeah, I don't think watching like Incredibles 2, Monsters University, Finding Dory all in a row and stuff is a great idea. But I did spread out the 2020s ones a little bit more, and I think I had a better impression of them. The good thing about watching the sequels, though, is that it's been about 20 years since I've seen the first one, so I think that helped a lot in that I can't remember the first ones that well. And I think watching the sequels a long time after the first one came out makes them less repetitive, probably. Maybe it benefits them.
I also went through a bit of a first-time viewing spree and a rewatch spree, and I didn't mind the recent ones. I saw Turning Red for the first time. I saw Onward for the first time. I saw Elemental for the first time. Onward was pretty good, but I didn't feel like it had the magic that the older ones had. And so Lightyear as well, which is one of their weaker ones. And the weirdest thing about Lightyear is that it starts with these tags, which is like, in 1995, a kid named Andy watched a movie that became his favorite film of all time. This is that movie. And then they do nothing to pretend like they're in 1995, and it's just a callback to Toy Story. So they could have cut that completely. I do think that the recent era is mostly not that interesting. Lightyear wasn't that special, Elemental wasn't that special, Luca wasn't that special, that's a step above them. However, I did really enjoy Turning Red, which you liked, which you pointed out as one of their worst, Marcel. I actually thought it was a film that, while it didn't really replicate all of the magic of old Pixar, I think it's a film that used magic and whimsy to... Essentially, it's a first period parable, where instead of getting her first period, a girl turns into a red panda. That part's cute. And you also have the fact it's a throwback to the 90s, Do you have the same familiar relationships going on? It's not one of the very best, but I really thought it was one of the films that stood out the most from the late era, though 2 years earlier they did Soul, and Soul really is one of the best. I think it would be interesting to look at, if we think that Pixar is weaker now, what is that magic that they lost? And I think Soul is a very good example of a film that manages to, in one way or another, retain that magic. For starters, I mean, our lead is a middle-aged teacher, a jazz musician. This is not who we expect to see in an animated film aimed at kids. And that's something we saw partially in the early era with films like Up as well, where we have unlikely protagonists that can draw us into the story. It's a film about life, about finding the little things. It's a film with a lot of more existential issues. And it's one of those films that, you know, through its messaging, storytelling, magic, really manages to just essentially bring the very, very simple point that life is beautiful, self-realization of who you are does not depend on your individual success. It has all of these little strains lined up, and I just think it did it beautifully and poetically, with, of course, theoretically talking animals, a lot of funny animated side characters, generally vibrant character gallery, and the world building in the afterlife. And that's something like we've saw in so many of their best films, and I'm sure we'll talk about Inside Out at some point as well, as the one of the big standouts of the sequel era, which also did that world building and in their inner life. And so on. And that's something I think we saw in pretty much every single early film. You had these teams, like if you look at Toy Story, it's, you know, the team of envy and fear of replacement. I mean, A Bug's Life is one of the weakest, but even that had, you know, this kind of getting together and standing up against the bully mentality, which is pretty basic, but still. You had Finding Nemo about family relationships. You had Wall-E, probably the most poignant of all, if we don't count perhaps the opening 10 minutes of Up. Like, I struggle a little bit to put it into words exactly what it is here, but I think it's just this balance of something that's genuinely poignant and emotional that hits all ages. Like, Wall-E is literally about the destruction of the human planet. You have a cute robot there, but we're seeing like what humanity can become. Then you have Up about, you know, this older, almost like late 70-year-old man who's, you know, you see his entire love story with his wife, and you can see that there might be some life after his significant other has passed as well. You have these different stories that hit hard emotionally and manage to still captivate you with charm and magic. And I like, that's the kind of thing that most other animated studios still don't do, honestly. And it's just wonderful when they do that.
Something probably all Pixar films share as well, that kind of at its basis, each Pixar film has a union of opposites, right? A kind of dichotomy or an embodied paradox. To go back to the first one, Sentient Toys, or the latest ones, the union of fire and water, right? Like, how can you make that relationship work? And it's something that kind of propagates across all of their films. In Up, right, you have this super adventurous, elderly man, right? Ratatouille, a rat that cooks food in a top French restaurant, and so forth and so forth, right? You can find these aspects in each one of their films.
I preferred the Ratatouille sequel, Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Rakakuni!
I was just about to do that one.
So, who did you guys say is your kind of favorite creative voice or director in the Pixar family? I know there's obviously been a lot of changes and shuffles. Obviously, directors that moved on to different studios and or did different projects. But of the directors, they have always been very collaborative, right? I mean, for me, the obvious answer is Brad Bird, right? I mean, The Incredibles is by far my favorite of the Pixar films. You know, straight 10 out of 10. I must have seen it probably 10, a dozen of times. Yeah, I mean, the Toy Story films are obviously quite special in them as well. And I don't know who was the progenitor of that. Was he called John Lasseter? Yeah, something like that.
Of course, John Lasseter also gave us Cars, so... And that was his project. He heavily pushed for Cars. Brad Bird is an obvious one. Peter Doctor is another of their more consistent, you know, he up Inside Out and Soul.
And Monsters, Inc.
Andrew Stanton is an interesting one. He's only done, I think, Wally and Finding Dory, but
he did Finding Nemo as well.
Okay, yeah. So if his name is on something, it at least catches my attention.
For me, it's Andrew Stanton with the Finding Nemo, Wally, Finding Dory, and then Pete Docter, I think, with the three you mentioned plus Monsters, Inc. is a decent fourth. And Brad Bird has not missed for me yet with his Pixar work, even his first animated film, Iron Giant, which is not Pixar, but also great. The other one I'm looking out for would be Lee Unkrich, because he's only done two so far, but it was Toy Story 3 and Coco. And it's hard to top those two. I don't know if he's going to be doing any other ones. But it looks those like are kind of like...
He co-directed Finding Nemo also.
Yeah, I tend to ignore co-directors in animated films just because it's a whole different class of... And it's who knows, like, just because the director doesn't necessarily mean that they were really influential in the story or the production. But in terms of the new generation of directors, those who weren't the OGs, who started out when the company started and sort of worked their way through the company, starting with their short films and then moving on, I'm excited to see more from Domi Shi, who did the short film Bao first and then Turning Red. And Peter Sohn now has made two films, Good Dinosaur and Elemental, which weren't too well received. But he's also the one who did, I think it was For the Birds, was his short film, if I'm not mistaken. Let me just double check. No, Partly Cloudy, sorry. He did Partly Cloudy, which you can clearly...
Oh, yeah.
Like, the cloud design in Elemental is very much the same as the cloud design in Partly Cloudy. So these directors who started out in the short films, and even Luca with Enrico Casarosa, his first short film was Luna, which was also quite good. So I'm wanting to see what these directors will do now that they've graduated to feature films, what their sophomore feature will look like.
Talking about Pixar's short films, I do think there are short films that I think are, you know, high points in Pixar's filmography. That, what was the name of it? I think it was Jerry's Game, where the old man was playing chess with himself. Their short films have a fun tone to them and don't overstay their welcome. And I think, you know, I've consistently enjoyed those. And I do think it's a little sad that they've kind of started to suppress them more by... They created these Spark shorts on Disney Plus and they kind of get buried. I think a lot of people haven't even seen a lot of Pixar's newer short films.
Yeah, I was going to mention the shorts as well. I think, I don't even know if they still make them like they used to, just like what you were mentioning, because I think alongside this, the quality of the feature films, I think that them having a short, like having so many shorts come out that were good quality, I think that made them stand out a little bit more. And although, like, I just caught up with the recent feature films, I've kind of lost track of if there are any big shorts, but certainly at their peak.
They've released 14 shorts in the last 5 years.
Wow.
So I think that people just don't know they exist.
Yeah, I guess that's the point, yeah.
Because they're on Disney Plus.
Part of it, too, though, is because of the pandemic, they weren't getting the theatrical release like they used to.
Yeah.
Like, I remember when we went to see Finding Dory in theaters, and the opening short, Piper, was just, it blew everyone away. It was just phenomenal. But we all got exposed to it on that big screen, whereas if it had been a pandemic release on Disney Plus, a lot of people would just skipped it and gone straight to the feature. So I feel like they lost a bit of that showcase. But I do think with Elemental, I was reading, one of the shorts did get released. Yeah, it was one of the Doug from Up. They did a bunch of shorts with him on Disney Plus, but the last one, they released it in theaters with Elemental, but I haven't seen it yet.
The Oscar-nominated one this year, Burrow, got released with Soul in its theatrical release.
It's not nominated this year. That was in 2020.
Yeah, sorry.
Oh, okay.
Did I say this year? I meant just Oscar nominated short.
Yeah. But like Burrow and Kitball were both Oscar nominated and they were both Spark shorts.
And most people probably don't know they exist because they're Spark shorts, which is sad.
I think I stumbled upon Kitball on YouTube because that's where it first came out. And I was like, oh, what's this one? And then I realized afterwards that it was a Pixar short and that it was part of an ongoing series.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because if you go on Wikipedia, like, it has original shorts and the last one's 2018, after that, it all becomes Spark Shorts. So I guess
that's just original concept. If you go further down, there's feature related. So like,
yeah, they're the ones that are connected to the films, right?
Usually, like special features on the Blu-rays, that kind of thing.
Yeah, the feature related ones are connected to the feature films, whereas the original shorts were released in the cinema, but alongside a film, but they weren't featuring their characters or anything, I think. Right, so there's a bunch of Toy Story shorts, there's a bunch of like Up, Brave, everything, basically. There's a distinction, the feature-related ones, yeah, they feature characters from the films, whereas the original ones are completely new, and I think the Spark shorts are like the original ones, because they're not connected to the films, but I think that's how it works.
But just out of interest, would you say that the Spark shorts are as good as the shorts they used to release that would blow everyone away?
Up there.
Yeah, there's some really good ones, but I think it was initially created as like a talent development program for young directors to give them an opportunity to create, so they weren't necessarily put as much budget into them. But yeah, there are some great of those Spark shorts. So I like them. I just realized there's a new one that came out this year I haven't seen yet, but I've seen all the other ones.
Oh yeah, I haven't seen the new one either. Self. The thing I like about the Spark shorts is they get a little more experimental, I think, because they're a lower budget, lower stakes. So, you know, they're not as much oversight. So they kind of just let them do whatever they want.
I was just going to check, Chris, what do you think of the shorts? Because you're normally a bit of an anti-short person.
I haven't followed their recent shorts at all, but the traditional shorts that they used to put out next to their films are absolutely fantastic. The amount of creativity and obvious love that they put into those projects, and just how well they work as well, because Pixar's older shorts, like Gary's Game, like Partly Cloudy, etc., they're not really in the ballpark of, say, these sketch ideas. They're still hitting you with a portion of emotion. They're doing something more creative visually as well. And the best one still manages to have that bit of magic. So, and tell it in such a short time. So I was always very, very impressed, even though they're not all equal, I was always very, very impressed by just how well they came out, honestly, because their overall quality matched, since I haven't seen the recent one, their output. Well, I'm not overly excited by shorts generally. Pixar shorts were at least a big exception. And I guess that means I should check out the new ones.
It's just a pity that it looks like they largely just stream them now instead, which is why I think they'd get less attention, because they were certainly always high quality. It looks like Burrow is the only one in the last 6 years that's been at the cinema as well.
Wow, that's a shame. I just looked it up. Presto, for instance, is probably in my top 10 shorts of all time. That was released during the height of the era, though, back in 2008. But yes, that's definitely a shame. But if they're the same quality, I'll do my best to seek them out. And I mean, it's nice that they're still doing them. It's just too bad that they're not getting the exposure they probably deserve.
Yeah, I think actually this is making me want to go and just binge all the Spark shorts.
I guess our next episode will be a short episode on the Pixar shorts.
Oh yeah, we could definitely do that. That's a nice follow-up. Yeah, let's do that, actually. I mean, we didn't speak... exactly. I mean, we didn't speak about their films as much as I hoped we would in this episode. I was thinking we would really dive into Toy Story and Wall-E, etc. But I think while our opinions on the movies and their late period probably won't change, it seems like we're all at least we're nearing the end of the episode, and we're all ending on a very positive note of excitement. So that's really awesome.
Were there other questions you wanted to get to, Chris? I'm just looking at the list.
Well, we kind of waded through a lot of them, and I didn't answer some. Like, I think in terms of best directors, it would be Pete Docter. For me, I think he's made 4 films now. Every single one of those 4 films for Pixar were great. I mean, I did ask what magic you think the older films had that the newer films have lost, but that was about 20 minutes ago, so I'm not sure if we want to go back to that. I guess we can talk about just what you think of like this last era of 5-6 films. Like, if you think they're trying to course correct, and if you think that with this new focus on original content, we're going to get a bit more of the old Pixar back. And just like, what do you think about Pixar's future, you know, coming into the end tail end of the 2020s here and their upcoming projects? So, what do you think about the last era? Are they better than the sequel era? And are you hopeful for what Pixar is going to bring us in the years to come?
I'm cautiously optimistic. Like I said, I'm interested in Inside Out 2. What I would love for Pixar to do is take a few more risks in the animation front from a visual stylization standpoint. You know, especially now that we have things like Spider-Verse and Mitchell and the Machines. The in-house style of Pixar is getting a little long in the tooth, and I really think if they can blend their screenwriting skills with a truly original or dynamic visual style, they could easily recapture what they once were. But it's just a matter of whether they want to take those risks or not.
Yeah, I guess I think cautiously optimistic is a good answer. I think the 2020s, to me at least, is much more interesting than when they were making so many sequels. I'm actually quite interested in Inside Out 2 because I think Inside Out is probably the best film. After the first 10, I would say Inside Out is the best one. I kind of wish they'd give up on Toy Story sequels as well. I think, I don't know if there's actually one officially announced, but...
There is, Toy Story 5.
They've kind of done that now, and I'm no longer excited about a new Toy Story film, so I'd rather they focused a bit more on original films. I think what was just said as well about trying something a bit different with animation. So I think you kind of know what you're getting from Pixar in general, and what you're getting is decent quality. But I do think trying totally different ideas and animation, taking some risks, I do think would make it a bit more interesting. But I'm a lot more optimistic and interested now that they're making more original films. But even like making Lightyear just seemed unnecessary. I think just to be clear though, like Toy Story, the Toy Story trilogy is like, they're by far my favorite films of Pixar. The first Toy Story and the second one are the only ones I really have nostalgia with, apart from A Bug's Life, which obviously isn't as good. So I kind of wish they'd leave that behind and just focus on original projects in general, because I think they still got potential to make some great films. But continually diving back into the Toy Story franchise or spin-offs, makes me less interested. So I hope there's more original projects, which I think is kind of the path they've been heading down. So I'm a bit more optimistic than I would have been.
I do wonder whether, say, if I was born within the last 2 years, whether, obviously, like, yeah, I wouldn't be able to go to the cinema to see them, and I'd probably have to enjoy them on the streaming services. But are these recent 6 films, right, are they really kind of films that are so rewatchable and formative? I don't know. I am definitely optimistic about the next two upcoming projects. I'll be looking forward to seeing them.
So I take umbrage at Adam saying that Bug's Life is obviously less than the first two Toy Story films, because I actually like it better. With regards to... I mean, it's also the only film I really need to rewatch, because I haven't seen it in 20 years.
I mean, I do like A Bug's Life. It's just the last time I saw it, yeah, again, was the 90s. I really like A Bug's Life, but I've never rewatched it. And Toy Story films I've watched multiple times. There's been lots of sequels. But I'm definitely not criticizing A Bug's Life. I think I like it more than most because I was about 10 the last time I saw it. So, but I like it. I had it on video. I had it on VHS, actually, so I must have watched it a few times when I was a kid.
I rewatched Bug's Life pretty recently, and honestly, I would put it pretty far below the Toy Story movies.
I definitely prefer Toy Story ones. It's just, it's very hard to comment on a film I last saw when I was like very young. But yeah, Toy Story is definitely better than A Bug's Life. I mean, I think that's, unless you want to do another podcast on Toy Story versus A Bug's Life.
Yeah, we could. Or just the Toy Story, or just the best Pixar films, we can actually talk about them in detail. I mean, I actually rewatched A Bug's Life yesterday as well. And I thought it was great. I mean, if A Bug's Life came out today, I would be heralding it as, you know, oh, is Pixar getting back into shape? Released when it was, it's their weakest of the early era, with the exception of Cars. That's my view. And it's the most conventional. You know, you have the princess, it's basic romance story, it's trying to impress the princess with the big schemes, but it has a lovable side gallery of characters, lots of fun, lots of inventiveness. It works perfectly well. It's just not as magical as the Toy Story films or any of the other big films from that era in my mind. But yeah, no, it's still a great film.
Did Brett actually answer? Because I think we just went off on a Bug's Life tangent.
Okay. So
maybe go back to Brett after 5 minutes of us arguing about Bug's Life.
Yes. No worries.
Go ahead.
So for me, for the last recent films from Pixar, I'm just going to ignore Lightyear because I prefer that didn't happen. But starting with, say, looking at Onward, Soul, Luca, Turning Red, Elemental, I'm quite happy with their output. Maybe it's not quite the heights that they had reached in their early days, but I still think they're all great films. And in terms of the rewatchability, I definitely feel that I see that already with Onward with my nephews. And I know that's got the rewatchability factor for kids. And I think Luca does as well. Turning Red might, for some scenes, there's some really, I think, fun scenes with the red panda that kids will want to revisit over and over again. Soul and Elemental being a bit more adult-ish, maybe less so, but I still think that they will hold up over time. I am excited for Inside Out 2. Even if it is a sequel, I think the first film was just such an unexplored concept that the second film's going to just go in a greater direction. And I think because the first one was such a success, it's going to be very hard for this one to flop. I am curious about Elio. I feel like that can go either way. It can be an amazing film or it can just be a miss. And I'm interested to see how that one ends up turning out. I will see it regardless, but I'm curious as to what the general audience will be, because that may dictate whether they're going to take more risks on original stories and out there concepts, or fall back on more tried and true Toy Story sequels.
While I'm a bit disappointed in the recent output, I mean, I wasn't impressed by Elemental like some of you were, and I think that Peter Zahn is probably the weakest recurring director. Though it was a good step up from The Good Dinosaur, so maybe he'll impress more on his next outing. I do think that the overall quality is solid. I think Soul really has the magic of the early films. I think Turning Red is a very worthy Pixar entry. And like I said, Onward and Luca are pretty good. I'm not overly negative towards the future of Pixar. I just don't think they are quite what they were. I'll definitely be looking out for future Pete Docter films, that's for sure, because he hasn't let me down yet. And while I was probably complaining a bit about sequels earlier, and I would honestly say that the only great Pixar sequels there ever been are the Toy Story sequels, I do actually think that Inside Out 2 has the potential to be the second great Pixar sequel. So I am cautiously optimistic for that one, and I am cautiously optimistic for Elio as well. I'm really hopeful that, you know, Pixar is going to keep picking up, that their new original content is going to be more inspired. I don't think that anything they'll do will be like, you know, Lightyear style disappointment. Even Lightyear was pretty fun. They haven't done anything as off key as The Good Dinosaur yet. So, I mean, I think it's funny that, you know, when we list our least favorites, it was Cars 2 from 2011 and The Good Dinosaur from 2015. So we're almost 10 years away from both since they had their low point, which can only be a pretty good thing. So is Pixar actually getting better, getting less mediocre? I mean, we would love to hear from you guys in the comments on the forum as well. We'll have a thread set up for this on the forum under the title, Is Pixar Mediocre Now? So just go there, join the conversation. Let us know which side you are on. And until next time, though I can't promise this next episode, I'm sure all of us will be watching new Pixar shorts, and it sounds like that episode will be happening sooner or later. So stay tuned, and thank you so much for listening. join us again soon.
You have been listening to Talking Images, the official podcast of ICMForum.com.